So I'm going to call this meeting of Tacoma's Landmarks Preservation Commission for October 28th to order. And we are going to begin this meeting with our, my screen went all weird, sorry. We're going to begin this meeting with me freaking out about my screen. with our traditional acknowledgement that we are on holding this meeting on the lands of the Puyallup Tribe of Indians. And thanks to Lauren Suhkammer, who sent me a link to this video that's now queued up on the screen, which I thought was really excellent from the Puyallup Tribal Language Program. And I think is we won't show it every time, but I thought it'd be good to show it at least once at our meetings to kind of remind us why we do these acknowledgments. So without further ado, Lauren.
Artis Watrifud Atish Poyalapaj, Aslasasil, Altidisha to Alturi Tuha.
It is the land right here that the Puyallup people have lived on since the beginning. This right here is where we are in the world, our homelands. Uyayus chas altiswatufted atishu ishuchas. Ukacha chas tisbadadat chas. Uoch twatichalot altiswatufted atispoyalapavsh.
We work on our ancestral lands. We raise our children who go to school on the land of the Puyallup people.
Ohegwed chasti shwananam tliti ohashitepti pas pasted okwereru.
We acknowledge that the Medicine Creek Treaty was signed for the whites to take our land for their benefit.
Ohashitep chas ati shwananam tliti ati swatwifkun chas otsukti pas pasted squatlup swatwifkun lup.
Land was assigned to our people. The Caucasians said, "This is your land," and they took that land from us too.
Okararitab chas atiswatwifkun chas odzak atab tis tliti.
Our land was stolen from us. Treaties were broken.
Toch didich chas a atislachel.
But we are still here today.
Our people forage for food and materials, we pick berries, we canoe, we practice our traditional ways, and we speak
Tolshutzim.
Just as our ancestors did.
We are finished.
Excellent. Thank you, Lauren. Let's get that one off before that next video queued up. It did not. Thank you. All right. So we, let's see, I have my mute off. Yes. Good. So we'll continue on. I thought that was really good. I just thought it was a really excellent video, and the Puyallup language program does a really, really great job. So it's a good reminder for us and why we begin our meetings in the way we do. So I will go ahead and have our roll call now, and I will just go through my screen here. So we have commissioners Sundstrom, Williams, Hilsendegger, Hart, Jaggers, Schlesser, and Friend, Morgenroth, Stewart, Mortensen, and Johnson, and Bartoy are present, and we'll move on to the consent agenda. So does anyone have any additions to the agenda? Hearing none, are there any objections with moving the consent agenda forward by unanimous consent? Hearing none, the consent agenda is so moved. Our first order of business is approval of our minutes. We had those sent in the packet. They are the minutes from the October 14th, 2020 meeting. Are there any corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, is there any objection with approving the minutes by unanimous consent? Hearing none, the minutes are so approved. And I do not believe we have any excused absences this evening, BT or Lauren. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct.
Correct. Okay. So we do not have any excusals. And now we will, I need to pull up the agenda on my own computer here. So apologies. And there was just a reminder that we had one administrative review since we've last met, 1754 Pacific. And then we will go ahead and move on with preservation planning and board business. And we have a presentation on the City of Tacoma Climate Justice Plan by Kristen Lynette. And was there anything, Ruben, that wanted to state in advance?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just it's all in the staff report. This is a informational briefing on climate impacts to Tacoma, Washington State. And Christy Lynette is our sustainability officer. And so she's seeking commission input. And there's, I think, going to be a visioning activity. And so the only thing I wondered if she wants to us to run the presentation from our end or if she wants to do it from hers, we can do it either way.
Yeah, maybe I'll, I've gotten practice screen sharing, Ruben, with it, if that's all right.
Okay, go ahead.
So that's not okay?
Yep.
Welcome.
Thanks, everyone. It's great to be here tonight with you. And yeah, again, thanks for your interest in this. So I am going to probably give a presentation for a little over 15 minutes, and then I want to take a pause for to answer questions, and then we'll go into maybe it's like a 10-minute sharing your sustainability story exercise. So I think, yeah, we're going to, I'll first talk a little bit about what are the impacts to Tacoma and Washington, briefly cover some real life local solutions, share a bit about our climate justice planning process that we're beginning, and then we'll do that story exercise. So I don't know if Ruben or Lauren or BT, one of you guys have, we had a quick little poll that I wanted to ask early on.
This is a first for us, I'd like to say, too. How excellent. A first.
Well, I know. I feel like
commission meeting.
I feel like I've been pushing some commissions, which is good.
I think we have that set up. I'm not sure exactly. Let's see here.
Sorry, this is BT. We do have the poll set up. Do you want me to start it now?
I didn't quite catch that.
We do have the poll set up. You want me to pull it up now?
Please.
Okay, it's a simple poll, but I'm just kind of trying to get a pulse of the audience who I'm talking to. There's no right or wrong answers here. So what's your sense of how much progress Tacoma's making on sustainability, climate, resiliency, and justice? So there's a lot in there. And then I can't see the number of responses, so BT or whomever, when you see enough people filled it in, maybe you can share the results.
Yes, so when everyone submitted their, we'll share the results on the screen.
We're having trouble hearing you, BT.
Looks like we have 9 of 13. I think that's
good critical mass there. That sounds fine.
So we should go ahead and end the poll.
Mm-hmm. Can you share the results? Oh, there we go. Okay, yeah, you know, most people are in that somewhat, for sure. Got a little significant and fair. I think that is a fair kind of assessment of where we're at. So thank you. We'll close that out. I'll move to the next slide. Okay, so yeah, I'm maybe going to spend the next 5 or 6 slides talking about the different areas and impacts that Tacoma and Washington, again, are currently facing and that we'll expect to feel heightened impacts in the next decades to come. So yeah, our local climate is warming. Since the Industrial Revolution, our temperatures have already increased 1.3 degrees Fahrenheit. And most of that warming has actually happened since the 70s. 18 of the last 19 warmest years on record have happened since 2001. And I think I just saw a headline that scientists are predicting that 2020 will be the hottest year on record. Looking forward, we'll see temperatures continue to rise. And by 2050, Tacoma could be up to 5.3 degrees warmer than it was. And this is important to understand because we know that warmer air doesn't just mean more beautiful sunny days. It means more disrupted and more extreme climate. So this means more very hot days. By mid-century, if greenhouse gas emissions continue on their current pathway, the average year in Washington will be warmer than the hottest year of the 20th century. And this could challenge agriculture through stresses on irrigation supplies and changing pests and diseases. More very hot days are likely to increase hospitalization, deaths, and demand for emergency medical services. Increases in ground level ozone associated with higher summer temperatures are also expected to increase. Warmer streams stress salmon and create more frequent harmful algal blooms on our lakes. And it's not just happening equally across our city. Heat islands are more severe in some of our underserved neighborhoods that have less tree canopy and green space. That warmer climate also means reduced snowpack. There's less precipitation falls as snow and more as rain. So you can see this photo here of a glacier on Mount Rainier and how it's receded over the last 50 years. This could bring reduced water storage, irrigation shortages, and winter and summer recreation losses, which again can have a significant impact on our jobs and economy. These warmer climate also means that the snows that wouldn't normally melt until summer are now melting earlier, bringing lower summer stream flows. This can have impacts on reduced summer hydropower, conflicts of water resources, negative impacts on salmon populations. Our peak spring stream flow has been happening earlier. Since the 1950s, the timing of our peak spring stream flow has shifted by as many as 20 days in many of these snowmelt influenced rivers, including the Puyallup. With that shifting snowfall, it means higher winter stream flows. These are all photos here in Washington State, can cause river flooding, costly stormwater management and flood protection, and negative effects on salmon populations where it scours out the salmon neds and rests beds. And then sea level rise. The seas here in Puget Sound and Tacoma have already risen 8 inches. As global temperatures rise, the oceans slightly warm and expand, the ice caps and glaciers melt, and again, more precipitation falls as rain instead of snow. And it's not just the sea level rise, though, but you need to add on high tide, wave run up, all those elements to see what kind of infrastructure could be impacted. These are all photos taken in Tacoma of king tides. So those are somewhat rare events that happen a few times a year where the tides and the moon lined up to really create extreme high tides. And those times are really kind of examples of ways that we can visualize what the sea levels will look like in the future on a more regular basis. Here's a map of Tacoma. And this is a map not of just base sea level rise change, but of a sea level rise with those extreme high tides that again happen a handful or two times a year, but can impact infrastructure that wasn't meant and designed to be wet with seawater. So dark blue represents today what parts of our land get periodically inundated with seawater. And then light blue is representing what it could look like in 2050 with a 19-inch sea level rise. A significant amount of land that, again, wasn't designed necessarily to be wet. For those of you that were here in Tacoma in 2015, you might remember seeing the news video of Stadium Bowl. It was like a waterfall river rushing down those steps at its peak. Climate change can bring more intense and severe rainfall events where our systems were not designed for that. Our pipes and other infrastructure, stormwater infrastructure, was designed for, rain spread out over days and hours, not these intense bursts. If you can recall, even just this past January, it feels like years and years ago, but we had a really significant rainfall event that flooded many intersections and other infrastructure. Again, that wasn't designed for it. And then there's wildfire smoke. This is a photo from 2017. I didn't have a chance yet to grab photos from just last month, but this is climate change literally in our faces and our lungs and hearts. It's especially dangerous for at-risk populations, those that can't get indoors, those that don't have access to good filtered air, and certainly made worse with COVID vulnerabilities. Scientists say that what we experienced in 2015 with reduced snowpack and increased temperatures, and then what we experienced this past summer with the wildfires are kind of like a postcard from the future. While they were kind of rare occurrences in our past, they could become more regular features of our life in the future. So this is just a little bit of an illustration of some of those impacts that our state already felt in 2015. There is definitely costs of inaction that we are bearing as a society and as a local community. There are true impacts, both health and economic, that we are already paying for. I want to briefly touch on why this 1.5 degrees centigrade is so important. You may have heard of that in the news the past few years. If our current emission rates continue, the Earth's carbon budget limit for limiting warming to 1.5 degrees C will be used up in about 10 years. And why this is important is that many global and planetary systems may not be able to right themselves above 1.5 to 2 degrees, and positive feedback loops could amplify other systems. So scientists warn that one tipping point, such as the release of methane from thawing permafrost, may fuel others, leading to a cascade. So a cascade of tipping points could occur because, for example, the melting of Arctic sea ice amplifies heating by exposing dark oceans that absorb more sunlight. And this may increase the melting of Greenland ice and permafrost areas. So these multiple risks then interact and build upon one another with just this 1 or 2 degrees increase. One other example is that our forests, 17% of the Amazon rainforest has already been lost since the 1970s. And the tipping point where a loss of forest leads to it drying out could lie in the 20 to 40% range. In the temperate forests, like ours in North America, heating has triggered more fires and pest outbreaks, potentially turning some regions from a sink for carbon into a source. All this is why 1.5 degrees centigrade is so important, and why in 2015, 195 countries endorsed the Paris Climate Agreement, committing to limit global temperatures. Our own mayor, Mayor Strickland at the time, pledged we are still in 2018, as President Trump signaled that he was pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord. I do want to briefly mention next Wednesday is when that will officially occur. So on November 4th, we'll officially be out of the Paris Climate Accord. But we can choose another path, and we must. This is a photo here of last September of the youth climate strike happened around the world, and here in Tacoma, hundreds and hundreds of people marched down the streets to City Hall to raise their voices for climate justice. We must do this for everyone, but especially our frontline community members. These are community members that cause the least amount of carbon pollution, but are bearing the worst and the first impacts of our changing climate. And so while we need marching in the streets, for sure, it's going to take more than that to create lasting change. But I truly believe that Tacoma can lead by example. We can solve this problem. Solutions exist today. While first and foremost, we need systems changes, individual actions are also important. And if we think of these solutions as opportunities for healthier, safer neighborhoods that are creating investments in clean jobs and industries, creating affordable and reliable transportation, there's so many co-benefits to tackling climate change. To briefly cover, there's two aspects of climate action. One is that mitigation side. We're really looking to reduce our emissions, reduce our caring for those impacts that we know are coming. Examples of mitigation and adaptation that the city and our partners have already taken. So that upper left, we have planting trees through free and discounted tree programs, and by planting more trees as part of our city development projects. The city has invested in fleet electric vehicles for our employees. You see a picture of that Link Light Rail extension happening in the Stadium District. And then next summer, this city is going to be finishing up a multi-year project to capture the methane from our wastewater treatment plant, turning it into a renewable natural gas that can then help fuel our garbage and recycling trucks, thereby displacing the diesel. Last year of our Tacoma Municipal Building that even included some electric fleet bikes for our employees to get around town for different meetings. The upper right is a picture of a detached accessory dwelling unit that was made legal through policy last year within the city. The bottom right is a photo of the Metro Parks Eastside Community Center, which is a green building using cross-laminated timber. And then the bottom one is we have a really amazing asset, over 100 years old, with our Tacoma Power hydro facilities. While dams and hydro can impact endangered salmon, they are Tacoma Power's electricity is 98% carbon-free and relatively inexpensive. So that is a great resource for us as we look to electrify not only our buildings, but our transportation systems. These two photos, the top one is a image schematic of Bowen Beach. So Ruston Metro Parks was already looking at updating Owen Beach. The facilities were old and in need of replacement, and they weren't quite keeping up with today's kind of recreational needs. But they also realized that they couldn't build it in the exact same place. So they worked with some of the latest modeling and analysis on the sea level rise, in particular to Owen Beach with the waves and the tides, and really realized they needed to pull everything back up the hill away from the water to protect it from the seas over the next, 100 years. And so this is just a picture showing how they're going to be pulling everything back away from the water. And then the bottom photo is a picture of the flood wall that the city put in around our wastewater treatment plant down in the tide flats located close to the Puyallup River. We put this in maybe 6 or 7 years ago, several million-dollar project, but we realized that that really critical piece of infrastructure, the treatment plant, was vulnerable to flooding because of the Puyallup River, in part because of these sea level or these climate change impacts. So these are just a couple examples of how we're looking to adapt some of our infrastructure to our changing world. So the city, we're just in the first phase of our climate justice action planning. It's going to be about a year-long process, and we're looking at both elements. How do we reduce our emissions, and how do we adapt? Both of those are going to be looking through an equity lens. We want to, again, make sure everyone in our community is safe and enjoys the benefits of this new climate-friendly systems and economy, and also doesn't bear the worst burdens of those climate impacts. So we are definitely using that as a lens through all our work. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. So this is, again, a photo of the September climate strike. In response to that, the City Council, 2 months later, last December, unanimously adopted a climate emergency resolution, which said in part, City Council hereby expresses its support for initiatives to foster a citywide climate emergency mobilization effort that will result in the goal of a just transition to a carbon neutral economy and accelerate adaptation and resilience strategies in preparation for intensifying climate impacts. One of the elements called out in that resolution was the development of a new climate action plan that would outline pathways for the city to reach our carbon reduction goals by 2050, commit the city to lead by example, and having equity and social justice play an integral role. So that's where we're at now. We are, again, beginning that process. It's about a year-long process. We're in this phase one right now, where we're both looking to understand community priorities and working with our technical consultants on the emissions modeling, identifying our vulnerabilities. We'll be moving then into phase two or in the early spring, where we'll be diving deeper into potential strategies and scenarios, again, really influenced through that social justice lens. So we have created two initiatives. We have just finished training 35 climate ambassadors who are going out into their own communities and engaging their friends and families and colleagues around these community priorities. We also are standing up an environmental justice leaders workforce. So this is a group of frontline community members who are really going to be playing an integral role in this planning process. They're going to be providing their own recommendations, even writing their own chapter to this next climate plan. And then we're looking to have a draft plan ready for review next summer with adoption next September. So I'm going to pause there before we get into the activity and see what questions people might have. either about impacts or solutions or anything about this planning process? I have to say, Ruben and I mean, we've talked about, like, the greenest building is the one that already exists. So I definitely feel like there is a strong connection between climate, sustainability, and historic preservation, definitely.
This is Jennifer Mortensen. I have a question about your outreach plan with everything being digital. What is your plan for the next 6, 8, 12 months of reaching out to the community and making sure you're hearing all the voices you need to hear as you put it together?
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, we had originally planned, like, lots of summer engagement events this past summer. And so we are doing a lot of digital, virtual meetings. I'm going to a lot. Our EJ leaders are all meeting virtually. Our climate plan ambassadors, we're giving them the option and giving them tools to both have small, safe, in-person opportunities for dialogue and discussion to hear their own community members' feedback. If it's, you know, a litter pickup in a neighborhood, or if they're going to, you know, go plant a tree together. So, you know, small, safe, in-person, if they want, or virtual. We're going to be doing more general outreach, you know, through online opportunities, but it is going to be tricky. That's one of the reasons that we're really trying to find some of these frontline community leaders who, again, have their own connections to their own communities and know how to reach them in an appropriate and relatable way to help us kind of get the word out about this. We're thinking of it more of quality over quantity of conversations and input.
Hi, Lisa Schlesser here. Could you restate the percentage of a source of power for Tacoma Power? I mean, what percentage of it is hydro, for example?
Yeah, like 98%. And it would virtually be 100, but there are a few times when they buy power from the Bonneville Power Administration, and they can't guarantee that 100% of their power is hydropower. So they say on average 98%.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I would like to say that this is such a massive, important campaign that the entire population needs to be mobilized and made active partners. And it's kind of like World War II. You have everybody has to be on board in doing their part. And I don't see little segmented efforts being very successful. I was hoping that you would have a more comprehensive plan. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Roger, for that. It is that important, and I wish it was that visible and that mobilizing at this point. Do you have any suggestions for strategies on how to do that? You know, this is such a tricky time. I mean, there was so much happening in our world. There were so many stressors and things that need attention from people. Truly, this is one of them, but it's not the only one. I mean, we're certainly open for suggestions, knowing, you know, we can't do everything, but we do want to reach as many people as we can and be most effective.
I guess.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Is it possible to enlist? Well, the Tribune's hardly a newspaper anymore. But I was thinking of mass media, getting them to promote the efforts to get on board with the strategies that you're proposing?
Yeah, you know, like that, like, for instance, we would love to, like, capitalize on the officially leaving the Paris Climate Agreement next Wednesday. But do you think that's going to get any press? Even if we tried to, like, piggyback on that news? Probably not. But I appreciate your concern and hope there, Roger.
Commissioner Hart.
Yeah, I guess my question is, like, what can we as a Landmarks Commission do then to support your guys' effort? Because I think we would all probably agree, not to speak on behalf of anyone, that we all agree this is an important thing that needs to be tackled immediately and critically, and it is an all hands on deck effort. So, like, what can we as city commissioners for Landmarks and in our design review process and in the work we're doing, like, how can we integrate this kind of effort for you guys?
Thank you for that. I think community influencers and leaders in your own communities, I would be happy to forward on through staff some of the engagement opportunities for you to share that with your own communities. So that's one element, just you being influencers and connectors. I'm not as familiar with your all's body of work, but I think, again, that there are probably some connections around existing buildings and that kind of value that they bring in so many ways, including carbon, climate. I think you all just thinking about this as you develop your work plans and your programs and keeping this climate lens as well as an equity lens through your work. I'm sorry, I don't have any more detail. I know I'm sure there are more concrete examples. And maybe that's I can certainly come back when we're in our phase two, when we have some more draft scenarios and strategies, and we can work with some of the staff, historic preservation staff offline too, to kind of see like where there are some joint actions that, again, both benefit historic preservation and sustainability.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I know I personally, if that's something that staff and the commission is open to, I know I personally would be more than open to some sort of collaborative effort if and when and where we can and help, you know, lift and elevate you guys and your efforts.
And I was going to mention too that, the other, I don't know, I'm sure you have connected up with other municipalities and other folks who are forming this, including at the state level with the Office of State Efficiency and Environmental Performance, the SEEP office and the Department of Commerce, who's doing this kind of on a state level. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's so multifaceted with everything, going from procurement to, there's so many things that are involved here and it's not necessarily something our commission oversees, but kind of thinking in the bigger terms of, when you did say, which is true, that the most sustainable building is the one that's still there, having, and I think there's probably that folks on the commission who could advocate for something like this. But when we start to look at, and it probably be something to have to move through council, embodied carbon, for new development in the city, things like that, you're really looking on an industrial level, or prioritizing things like, I know LEED is popular, but prioritizing requirements for something along those lines, or, on a city level, like for civil infrastructure, Envision is a similar system for sustainability or civil infrastructure. So there are those kind of things out there, frameworks out there that can be used.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think there's opportunities for salvage, which I know that we kind of have a little, you know, a nascent industry on that here, but I think there's some great opportunities with that as well. So, yeah, thank you. All right, so I wanted to turn it over to one then brief sustainable city activity. So you guys can either do this on your phone or on another tab on your computer. If you have your phone, that might be slightly easier. I don't know if anyone has used Menti. It's menti.com. So I'll just wait a second and then we'll get grounded in 2030 in Tacoma. All right, so once you're on in the code, I'll say the code out loud if you're at that page. 18-37-99-4. 18-37-99-4. All right, if you guys are there, you need to close your eyes. Imagine it's 2030 in Tacoma. How old are you in 2030? How old are your family members? How big are your kids if you have them? What's your hairstyle look like? Get situated in your future self. What's it feel like to be 10 years older? How do your hands feel? How do your shoulders, your back? What does your life look like? What are you doing for work if you are working? Now imagine what's around you. Where do you live? What's outside the window? What's down the block? You guys there? Are you in 2030 in Tacoma? All right. I'm going to share the first part. This is a 6-part kind of fill in the blank story. So the year is 2030. The place I live has. It could be a word or a short phrase. And you'll have like maybe 30, 40 seconds to put something in. We'll go like 10 more seconds. Okay, next one. To get home from my job, I blank. Or maybe it's your volunteering. Yeah, okay, there's a teleworker. Okay, next one. In 2020, blank was an issue in Tacoma. Lots to choose from, unfortunately. All right, 10 more seconds. Okay. Now that has changed because blank. Well, hopefully we got that. 10 years. Ten more seconds. Cool. Like that last one. All right. In 2030, I finally get to blank. These sound great. Ten more seconds. Yeah, I want all these things. All right, in 2030, I finally get to blank, comma, because blank. I caught the shot. Cool. All right, 10 more seconds. All right, these next few slides are really demographics questions. It's really important that we are hearing all voices in our city. And so, it's just important that we capture, again, who's sharing their stories. Like 10 more seconds. Okay, 5 more seconds. There you go. Five more seconds. Okay. All right. So these last two are really just optional. There'll be two questions. This one, we're gonna be looking again to share these opportunities with our broader community. And so we'd love to be able to share some stories along the way to encourage other people to share their vision. So if you kind of liked your story and wouldn't mind sharing it, you can put your first name. All right, and this last one is just if you want to be kind of on our mailing list and kept in the loop directly about opportunities for engagement, you can feel free to add your email. We'll also be coordinating with Ruben and Lauren about opportunities to engage you as a full commission, but if you want individual opportunities, you can put your email in here too. Great. Well, that is all I had. Let me stop sharing.
Great.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Did you guys, now I'm wondering, could you guys see the screen and the answers?
I couldn't, Minty?
But... I think the screen share went off and I didn't reshare it. So you guys couldn't see each other's answers pop up. I'm sorry about that. I meant to have it so you could see them scrolling on the screen. I could see them. They were good. Sorry.
We're a very, very fine commission, I'm sure. It was good answers.
A lot of people are hoping they're retiring in 10 years.
Wow, a lot of people are that lucky. Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you again for the time and your service on this commission.
Great. Thank you. Oh. We had a question here. Is there any way to get a report out of the?
Yeah. We're capturing all this and I'd be happy to send it to Ruben without.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Thank you.
Excellent. Bye-bye. So let's see, we're moving on to our next agenda item again, board business, commissioner elections. I'll hand this over to the Honorable Mr. McKnight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This will be very, very short. Those of you who have been on the commission for a while and been through one of these cycles knows that despite all of the formal procedures we have in our bylaws and our codes, we do not have a formal process for or requirements specifying the manner in which the officer elections occur. And so it really varies from year to year. And sometimes it depends on if there's multiple folks that want to be officers of the commission, or if there's nobody that wants to be an officer of the commission, then it gets a little more interesting. We have to put something together. So, but each year, the commission does nominate the election of a chair and vice chair. And so we have Chair Bartoy and Vice Chair Johnson, I believe. And so, at any rate, I will leave it to the commission to determine how they want to proceed forward.
Well, generally this is rock, paper, scissors, as everyone knows, but kidding. Yeah, I was, I just opened it up. You know, I'm willing to serve again. I haven't talked to Commissioner Johnson in that case. So I'm willing to throw my name in the ring if you all would like me to continue to serve, but also like to open it up to the opportunity to have others serve in these positions, especially if they feel like it's something they're interested in and interested in as a development opportunity. So like, throw it open there.
I would like to say that Commissioner Bartoy has done a reasonably good job as chair. He keeps things in order and rarely makes a mistake, so I think he should continue. I nominate Commissioner Bartoy as chair.
Hear, hear.
I'll support that. And I would say that Vice Chair Johnson has done an excellent job filling in the case that Chair Bartoy is unavailable. So I would nominate him to continue in his role as vice chair, unless there's someone else who would really like the opportunity to jump in on that one.
I will echo those sentiments.
What about Commissioner Mortensen taking over vice chair?
Oh, throwing it back at me, huh?
Yeah.
I suppose vice chair could be something relatively low time commitment from commission standpoint. Should we have a vote? Who they like better?
I have a question.
Yes, that's we this is our kind of ornate form jazz once a year election. So go ahead.
How long? So this is a yearly thing.
Yes.
Okay.
It could be lifetime.
No. Okay. No, that just, I was just curious. I know I personally may have an interest at a later time, but I'm still so new and getting just my own bearings as a commissioner. So I'm happy with how things are going. I think Mortensen would be a fantastic vice chair as well. So all of those options above sound fantastic to me.
I had another question, and that is, how many years do Commissioners Mortensen and Johnson have on their terms with the commission?
Commissioners, was that Mortensen and Johnson you asked about, Commissioner Stewart?
Yes, and you as well. We had talked about when the terms are set to expire, I think, last meeting.
Commissioner Johnson has been on since 1900. Just kidding.
Mr. Chair, I'm actually trying to pull up the
thank you
exact appointments paperwork right now. It might take me a couple of minutes unless Lauren's faster than I am.
I believe I started at the beginning of 18, so I'm wrapping up my third year now, but I did email Ruben and Lauren and say I'd be interested in serving another term if it's fine with the city council.
And unfortunately, right now, the appointments process is a little bit delayed due to, you know, certain circumstances in the world. And so normally we would have a better understanding of where that process is by now, but we don't. And so, hang on, let me just pull up here. This is live opening of files, as we say here.
At least you don't have your screen shared as you're doing this. And something embarrassing is coming up. As we're waiting, I must say how I appreciate the reasonably good job I've done and the excellent job that Commissioner Johnson has done.
I would have used the word excellent for you as well.
I apologize, this is taking me so long. I usually have this right up and I'm ready.
I think it wasn't it also in our last packet as well? So
the poll there were certain terms, yeah. Let me see about that here.
If you have the
I'll have it momentarily.
Oh, but we were thinking maybe some of those were not right. I think
at least one seemed off, if yeah. I remember right.
We have a mistake in the...
Someone had said that they thought that... I think it was...
I think I was wrong.
Yeah, Jeff and Lisa had like started together, but it was listed differently or something like that.
Yeah, sometimes it does get confusing too, because the terms themselves might be, for some reason filled, like occasionally someone will leave the commission, then an appointment occurs on a different date than the rest of them because it's an unexpired term, for example. So, which is a possibility. I'm not saying that's the case, but.
And that's, I came in on a unfilled last year of an open term, I think, and then I think I'm finishing out my first full 3 year.
This is like that when you have that dead air space on the air, and
Lauren makes you to it.
Here, let's see what you got. Oh, look at that.
Didn't we also determine that there was a term limits that once you served 3 terms, you had to rotate off?
There's a 10-year term limit.
So with each of the terms being...
I think I've got to be getting pretty close to 10 years.
Unfortunately not.
You've been saying that for a while.
No, because I guarantee you I've been on longer than 2017.
I hate to break it to you, Jeff, but I think that you and I both started in 2013.
I think we did. I mean, it's been forever.
No, it only feels that way.
That means you have one full term left
of service. I had brown hair when I started.
I'm only 20, but what the hell?
Well, I guess does this answer your question, Commissioner Stewart, somewhat?
I think so. I just want to make sure that someone's term wasn't ending this year, and then we're voting them to be a chair for next year, and they are expired positions that wouldn't be a good spot to be in.
Well, it doesn't look like that
initially. We can have a snaps.
Both commissioners, Commissioner Mortensen and I, are up for renewal. So, but barring the city council finds out all the nefarious things about us, it generally will go through.
I'd be happy to take on the vice chair role if you prefer, Roger. Commissioner Johnson, excuse me.
It's not a big workload, I've got to say. So yeah, you're more than welcome to do it.
Okay, well, let's wrap this up with, let's see, we never really have a traditional way to do this. As Ruben has explained, we've done it by acclamation or whatnot. So it sounds like barring any additional conversation. Give folks a moment if anything else. No. If no one else has anything, there's more data. If no one else has additional comment on it, let's just do it by general acclamation that Commissioner Bartoy remain chair and Commissioner Mortensen replace the illustrious Commissioner Johnson, who has served ignobly and need a thesaurus. Anyone else want to throw in an adjective before this gets formally done? Reasonably well.
I want to see that in the minutes.
So that is what is before us. How's that sound? Maybe we'll just say, does anyone object to that? Well, we'll vote in the negative for maybe a first time. Is there any objections? Hearing none. Does everyone want to say aye just for the heck of it?
Aye.
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 Aye. Excellent.
Aye.
Our random tradition is continued for another year. Thank you all.
Huzzah!
Huzzah.
And it looks like, Jeff, you are until 2023.
I'm going to be 79.
I hope we all make it to that year.
We're all going to be 79. But
seriously. 2023? That's three more years.
That's an eternity from now.
It is.
I'll confirm that, but that's my notes here that I have from last year's appointment process.
I think she was asking on that questionnaire, where will you be in 2023? And I think I put, likely I'll be dead.
I'm not sure. I wish we could have seen each other's answers. That would have been so much more fun.
I know. That's why I thought something was going wrong. I thought she was going to show him at the end or something. I was, we were waiting.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so moving on, I see the picture, and I believe it is our events calendar. Am I correct on the agenda?
You are. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hammer.
So a couple weeks ago, we had the director for the Puyallup Language School do a great presentation on preserving their oral tradition, and you can find that video up on our Facebooks and on YouTube. I think I sent it out. So November 19th, we'll have Tamiko Nomura. She will be talking about public history and working with the Japanese American and African American communities in Tacoma. Then we're going to have a virtual tour showing then and now of Tacoma with Pretty Gritty. And then in December, we've got Jackie Peterson talking about inclusivity with historic preservation and preserving what matters. Let's see here. And then, following in line with what Kristen just presented, we will have Earthwise and Second Use presenting in January about salvage stories, the importance of salvage and reuse, and some great Tacoma projects that they've recently completed. And that's all.
Excellent, thank you. And then I believe we will move on to chair comments. And I do have just brief, I will keep it ever so brief.
Chair, sorry. I have one quick question for Lauren. Is there a date for that Tacoma then and now, or is that TBD right still?
Is that, which one was that?
It was the...
This is November 21st.
November 21st. It just wasn't on the slide. Sorry.
Just pulled it up. There you go.
21st. Thank you.
8 p.m. Yes. And then for Cherish comments, I just wanted to bring up, and it's something I've been talking about with Ruben when we meet. We had our, and I forget the, it was our work group that we had formed dealing with matters of equity and inclusion. And just wanted to kind of give, I don't know if it's even an update really as much. I mean, everything has taken us sideways over the last 6 months or so. But I know that, you know, just to provide a little bit of an update that, you know, that group is working, we have not met, but is working kind of in concert with the Historic Preservation Program to support their efforts. And I just wanted maybe Ruben or Lauren to provide just really briefly kind of, I don't know if it's a vision or kind of where things are headed. I know we've talked about things being incorporated into more comprehensive planning, and Ruben had shared the city resolution with me on anti-racism. And it's something that I kind of wanted us as a commission to consider if we take a stance, make a statement about anti-racism as a commission and making that a value that the commission holds and upholds. And in so doing, I think as a commission, it gives us a chance to maybe reflect on some of the structural issues that we oversee as a commission that we think may have effects on equity within preservation in Tacoma.
So, Mr. Chair, would you like me to say some things?
I would like you to say some things, Mr. McKinney.
Okay, so Chair Bartoy and I had discussed the possibility, or not the possibility, but the process by which the commission and the historic preservation program also start to sort of evaluate, you know, how we do what we do through the you know, equity lens, inclusion, and also, though, I think separate, I think this is something we talked about, was this idea of having the commission be proactively and committed anti-racist position. And this is something that the City Council passed a resolution recently stating the city's commitment to anti-racism. Some other boards have discussed this as well, and some many other cities are also taking positions on this. And so, I think it's something that the chair brought up. I think that the timing is right for the commission to bring this up as a topic of discussion. But I also wanted to take the opportunity to sort of fold this into some of the other things that that we are looking at from the, I guess, the operational side or the administrative side of the historic preservation program. So we have been discussing for internally for a while now, probably for the past, 2020 at least, before COVID happened, which is to review the historic preservation program for equity and inclusion, sustainability, housing, and other important things that are kind of missing from our policy framework. For example, the equity and inclusion, believe it or not, in our preservation plan that was adopted in 2011 does not even mention those at all, which is crazy, you know, in the world that we're in, but it's true. And I think that right there shows the importance of reviewing the policies that you do have and updating them from time to time. So so we are working towards, in concert with the comprehensive plan itself, to take a look at the preservation plan, kind of do an audit for that. And Lauren and I have discussed on several occasions sort of some of the structural issues that we also have in the program. We all saw the opportunity map presentation, a very, very fascinating presentation that was presented to the commission, I think, last year or early this year. The past is kind of blending a little bit funny for me right now, but it showed that there are clear geographic distinctions between opportunity, public health outcomes, income, education, access to services, and so forth. And you know, if you're, you know, perfectly, you know, clear-eyed and you look at how preservation looks on a map in Tacoma, there are some factors also that show that we're not servicing the city evenly across its, you know, across the whole city. And so so we have work to do there. You can see that Lauren has also been actively steering our programming into exploring these issues. We call it Broadening Horizons, which was the Preservation Month theme a number of years ago, but continuing to work through that to expand both the reach and the audience for preservation, and to try to keep it relevant and useful and a benefit to as many people as we can in the city. So so that's kind of my spiel on this. I do think that a conversation needs to be had probably with this commission and staff to take a look at, I mentioned before, equity audit of the historic preservation program, and see how our work is either benefiting or not benefiting folks, or is inclusive or not inclusive, and what some of those structural barriers perhaps that we have that need to be addressed. is the landmarks criteria, are those correct? Do those adequately address community needs? Does the designation process itself a barrier? Do we view integrity, in the right way? And those sorts of things. So at any rate, this is something I've also brought up internally to discuss both with my boss and also, to see what the Planning Commission is also doing. But that's sort of my general, approach to this, but it's a policy code and outreach approach. And I don't know, Kevin or Mr. Chair Bartoy, if there's something from our conversations that I've missed there, please fill in where I've skipped things.
No, I think that's really good. And I think, it's changed a little, the events that have happened over the past year have changed things, a little bit in terms of, I think I don't think they've changed things necessarily, but they brought things to the fore. And I really wanted to start throwing out some of these ideas to the commission, particularly the ones around anti-racism and the ideas of Mr. McKnight said, the proactive approach to things and the idea of equity audits. Also the idea, if you haven't heard of it, of an equity pause. It's an idea in designing where as you're going through a decision-making process, that you take an active pause to that process to actually consider matters of equity. And I can send out a link to that after the meeting, where it's specific questions you ask about, who are decisions going to affect, who is not here, who have we not heard from as part of this decision, so that we can actively make equity part of our decision-making process. But as part of this evening and introducing the topic, I mean, it is something that we've been working on, I think, as a commission, coming out of the presentation, I believe, that we saw on equity or right around there is when we started really talking about this. I wanted to see if any commissioners, what your thoughts were about this, the commission taking, and I guess that would be about this writ large, if you have any feedback on that, and maybe specifically about the idea of the commission making an active anti, racist stance. I mean, however that may look.
We really don't have people of color at the table. I mean, it's been a very white commission since I've been on it, which we learned tonight was since 2013. So I feel like there's got to be, people of color at the table on the commission. That's got to be the first step that we take. And I think that's going to mean recruiting in ways that perhaps we haven't recruited in the past, personally.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point, Commissioner Williams. And I think, that kind of assessing where we are, and I believe we had one person of color on the commission since I've been here. That was briefly, Commissioner Flowers, is that right? I think that, that would be one of those issues that we address. If we are proactive about this and we're looking at, the commission representation, what are the, probably even more so, what are the barriers to representation? Obviously we may not be hitting the right mark in terms of recruitment, or, what are those barriers to recruitment to having BIPOC Tacoman serving on the commission?
My hope is that we would organically find a way to encourage the BIPOC community to want to engage in and pursue joining a commission like ours or others. I hate approaching it like we have to fill a target quota, because then it feels like a statistical thing and less about the purpose and the meaning and the people. And I don't know what that looks like. And this is a continual thing I see on all government levels. It's especially in this area that is very predominantly white when it comes to government, especially down in like the Thurston area. This is a big topic down in Olympia right now. And it's, I don't know what the answer is, and I hope we can find one collectively, because I think that is a no-brainer. Yeah, like we need representation of all communities, because Tacoma represents all communities. And on that note too, like, why is it when we're doing design review, it's almost consistently the same more predominantly white wealthy neighborhoods that we're seeing design reviews for? Is that because there are no historic districts in areas that are more predominantly of a non-white community? I don't know. I don't have that level of familiarity with our districts and stuff yet. So
Lauren, do you want to talk about our experience in South Tacoma?
I blocked out that experience.
I have too. We did, when I was on the Board of Historic Tacoma, Lauren was our intern actually, and we did a huge outreach to the commercial building owners in South Tacoma, because we felt like that could become a historic district, and those owners specifically would benefit a lot from the historic tax credits that would be available as a result of that. And we spent a lot of time and energy doing outreach down there for about 6 months. And we finished it up with a presentation to all the building owners in that area. And literally no one was embracing it at all. It was very disappointing, because most of those buildings down there would have been eligible. So it's tough, because I think when you've got people that are in a lower socioeconomic group that want to fix up their buildings, their solution is to sell it and not fix it up. And that was what we kept continually hearing. And so just to answer your question, Jonathan, we as a Historic Tacoma had done outreach and kind of came up flat. So it's an ongoing education process for everyone in the city to understand the benefits of historic districts.
And I guess that in turn then beckons the question, are there a lack of resources for people who may not have the same financial status to do renovations and rehabs on historic properties? Do we see that communities that are of historic value that are falling apart because the people living there don't have access? Like, there's got to be grants and funds and things we as a historic commission have reached to that we can give these people visibility to. I mean, maybe not, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely took them through all the programs that were available, and we actually did, calculations on, if you were to spend $100,000 on renovating your building or updating it or whatever, this is what the numbers would look like over the next 10 years for your tax credit. Just from the county. So we did take them through that. But again, I think there's just a lack of understanding about historic preservation and a will to enact that. They just felt like it would, be too restrictive to have that become a historic district. And it was super disappointing. So, I sound like the old guy that says, oh, we tried it and it didn't work, so we shouldn't try it again. And I don't want to, at all imply that. I just am saying we have done outreach in the past. We were unsuccessful. It could have been Lauren and I did a bad job, at the end of the day. But certainly I don't think that's a reason to stop trying.
I wonder then if the experience was negative with businesses may be less inclined and have less emotional value and attachment to a space, right? If when you're dealing with families and personal dwellings and homes and more residential neighborhoods and those types of districts, that's where I'm thinking, because those would be people who would want to do whatever they could to improve their home and their neighborhoods and add value, and historical importance, I feel is important to everybody.
Yeah. We took a city survey, and there have been surveys done of neighborhoods throughout the city about how many buildings within each neighborhood or each district area would be eligible for for landmarking and then, you know, rolled that out. And actually in South Tacoma, there was not enough residential building stock to justify a district. Certainly there was individual homes that could have been individually landmarked, but when it came to carving out an area like the Wedge, for example, that says, okay, we've got a lot of these houses are intact and they certainly would qualify. We were unable to do that in South Tacoma. Doesn't mean that there aren't other neighborhoods in the area that would be more eligible for that. But at that point, which I think this has been like, you know, 8 years ago that we did it, you know, there wasn't enough residential stock that was intact enough to create a district down there.
Commissioner Mortensen, did you want to?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. There's a lot that just got said. I think that that we're hitting on a lot of problems in preservation that are national. The underrepresentation of people of color, for sure. And I was going to make a comment earlier that Commissioner Hart touched on is that, yeah, we don't review a lot of buildings owned by people of color because not a lot of buildings owned by people, well, there are fewer buildings owned by people of color, and they're not landmarked. And when Ruben referred to a mapping presentation that we had, which showed that the landmarks are predominantly in the higher income neighborhoods in our city. And as far as outreach and survey, I think that is definitely a long process. And I'd love to see it continue. You know, Historic Tacoma and the city are working together on a survey project in McKinley right now. And we all know that the North End District took many years to establish and many versions of its geography to grow to where it is now. So definitely it is a long process, but as Ruben mentioned, this was not included in our commission's plan before. So I think hopefully we can kind of take a hard turn and make sure that our efforts moving forward do have this lens and do have this focus sort of amidst the tools with which we must work. So I certainly agree with Commissioner Williams as well that even though outreach has been maybe not as successful as we hoped in the past, that we have to keep talking to people and reframe the conversation in a way that's meaningful, particularly because preservation has at least traditionally been sort of a narrow focus, and things are viewed in very specific ways. And like I said, it's a national issue that people are addressing now more wholly, but there's still a long, long way to go.
And anyone else? I think that this was a really fantastic conversation to have. I mean, my feeling is from the conversation here that I think we all support a message of anti-racism. And I think a lot of the things that were just talked about are, you know, we're jumping to the, hey, let's get out there and solve it. I mean, it sounds like we're gung-ho on that. So unless there's commissioners who object, I'd like to kind of continue working with Ruben in terms of figuring out what the commission, how to formulate kind of a statement of anti-racism for the commission, to bring it back before the commission to discuss further. I think that, and I don't know if you wanted to chime in here, Ruben, or not. Ruben and I have also been talking about a retreat for the commission in the spring. That's something you wanted to?
Sure, Mr. Chair. Chair Barchoy and I have been discussing this, and Lauren and I have also been discussing that we typically do a commission kind of training in the spring, and over the past few years, it's been that statewide one where the Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation co-hosts, and now they're just doing it for us. And we think that maybe it's time for us to do a Tacoma Commission specific one again. We have some big topics. This is certainly one that I think it sounds to me like there's a lot of things. Well, it doesn't even sound to me. We all know there's a lot of things to unpack and to work through. And so I think it's a great thing to have as a sort of a working brainstorming session. The other part we were planning to look at too was a little bit more about how the demolition review process works as far as the commission operations go. But we're in sort of the, I guess, early planning stages of putting something together for this commission. And we think that it's very appropriate and timely to include this as a topic of discussion. I will say that there are a lot of things that were discussed just now with the, regarding geographic distribution, representation on the commission, resources available, the cost itself of preservation, the barriers to nominating things, the barriers to going through design review. And I mean, it just, there's lots and lots of things. There's lots of things even related just to property ownership. The historic preservation tends to be something that interfaces a lot with property owners, and that right there is an issue. So I think that it would be a really, really fruitful discussion for us to try to set up and maybe get some facilitation into it, help work through some of these issues. And I think that would also be a really good thing to do as we ramp up towards looking again at our policy framework and structure too. So I look forward to all of these conversations.
I have one comment, I guess, pertaining to the follow-up then, because I think this sounds like a great plan, and I'd love to see you guys continue what you're doing. It sounds like you guys have been putting in some really solid effort. I guess as far as the statement content goes, I guess my question and comment is the statement going to be a broad sweeping blanket statement, or is it actually going to have some concrete action plan? Because I've seen a lot of similar commissions and committees do so and do just that broad sweeping thing. And to me, that's not as impactful. And it's kind of I don't want to call it a cop-out, but it's a cop-out. And I think we're in a time and place where it is so pertinent that we have to define what that action is to actually make the change happen.
No, I agree, Commissioner Hart. I'm working in my other life outside of the commission, working on doing similar things with Washington State Ferries right now. And that's been a key component of moving that anti-racist agenda forward, has been tying it to objectives, have been tying it to results, things that are measurable. You know, a lot of people I think have expressed in that other process, which I think is very common in these processes, expressed kind of dissatisfaction when it is a statement and doesn't seem to really have any kind of meaning behind it or actions behind it. So I think that, you know, this, at least in my head, is a statement that then is backed up by a lot of the things that we've been talking about here, a lot of the things that Mr. McKnight was talking about, where we're, you know, talking about having this retreat, focusing on this, having a basic, an equity audit of how we do, you know, business. A lot of, I think, early on here is going to be baselining. A lot of this is trying to figure out, okay, what are the barriers out there? What are these things that are keeping us from where we want to be? I think we have to know where we are now, and we have to know that gap and really focus on finding that gap. So with that, I think it sounds like everyone's in agreement, kind of continuing on with this work. And if everyone doesn't know, Ruben and I kind of meet the week before commission meetings to discuss these things and upcoming items on the agenda and those things. So we'll continue that conversation, hopefully bring something back in the next session of the commission, or at least continue it as a discussion then. And then the last piece of business was a reschedule for that next meeting date. Mr. McKnight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a bit of a administrative detail here that the 2nd November is Veterans Day. And so we will would not be having a meeting scheduled for that day. So staff proposes moving it to the following Wednesday, which would be the 18th, the week before Thanksgiving. We have, I think, one more special tax valuation that we have to get through. I know that for that agenda the follow-up to this. And so we would propose if and we don't need to know exactly now, but propose to move that meeting to November 18th. So November, not to November 11th, yes, November 18th.
Does anyone have any immediate concerns with the reschedule? And just a reminder, we only have one meeting in November and one meeting in December. So for commissioners who haven't lived through an annual cycle with us yet, it's just a reminder we usually don't have that second meeting of each of those months because of the holidays. Hearing none, I think it sounds good and you get the info out and it's all good. Great. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, and thanks for sticking in and having this great conversation. I'm really, again, pleased that I think it's on a lot of people's minds.
It is the land right here that the Puyallup people have.
Lisa's going to leave us with our an acknowledgement on the way out, too. So very appreciative with that. I will adjourn the meeting, and I'll send out the a link to the equity pause too, when we maybe I'll have Ruben or Lawrence send that out. So
thanks, Chair. Have a good night, everyone.
Bye. Meeting's adjourned.